Welcome to No Alter Egos, the place for conversations without the mask. We're broadcast every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on WHPB 98.5 The Wire in Pine Hills, Florida, as well as WUVS 103.7 The Beat in Muskegon, Michigan. And we also have a 3 p.m. Tuesday rebroadcast on WVBHLP Power 105.3 in Benton Harbor, Michigan. For those who either miss the live broadcasts, or if there's something that you want to see, or just watch it on demand for yourself, or engage with the podcast in a new and unique way, we now have our companion YouTube channel that's up with video rebroadcasts of every weekly podcast, and that's available on the No Alter Egos podcast channel on YouTube. You can also keep up with us or contact the show at No Alter Egos on both Facebook and Instagram. Of course, to get in contact with me, I can be found at Trill Kennedy on Instagram, and that's Trill with no I, so T-R-L-L-K-E-N-N-E-D-Y on Instagram, and at Trill underscore Kennedy on TikTok. And once again, that's Trill with no I. Just want to welcome everyone back. For those who are new to the show, may not know what it's about. Here at No Alter Egos, I talk to you guys about the latest newsworthy items from the world of current events, anything that's going on around the globe or here in the U.S. that I think is newsworthy and noteworthy. We also take the time to throw in a little bit of a reading section in terms of whatever book I'm currently reading. I like to share that with you guys as well. And I usually like to leave you guys with a final thought at the end of the show to take with you throughout the week, something uplifting and encouraging. So if you're new to the channel and that sounds exciting, intriguing, interesting to you, please like and subscribe to the YouTube channel if you're listening to this on the live broadcast. As I said, if at any point you feel like there's something you missed, you want to hear again, or if you just want to put a face to the name, the channel is the No Alter Egos Podcast on YouTube. You can find us there with a quick search in the YouTube search bar. And looking forward to having more of you come in, drop a like, share it, drop a comment, whatever the case may be, if you feel moved and inspired to do so. But welcome back to the show. To everyone that has been here since day one, especially thank you guys for listening, for telling your friends about it, for growing the show's audience throughout this past year and change that's been on the air now. And we have a lot to get to. There was no show last week, and I thought that maybe there would be a little bit of a reprieve from the constant news cycle, but of course, news never sleeps. And in the span of time between the last show, where of course we were talking about the Sacramento shooting and how it was being linked maybe back to some gang activity and whatever the case may be, but in the 2 weeks since then, there have been, and this is just what's been nationally publicized, because it doesn't always get talked about, especially if there aren't a high number of casualties, but there have been at least 4 mass shootings now in the past 2 weeks that have made national news headlines. Of course, there was the gruesome Brooklyn subway shooting, which thank God it doesn't look like anyone died. It was just a bunch of injuries from that. Of course, Frank James, the suspected shooter, was arrested. We're going to get into that just for a brief little bit. As we get into the show, there were also the 2 consecutive days of shootings in South Carolina, as well as this most recent one in Washington, D.C., and that's coming on the heels of a climate change activist lighting himself on fire in front of the steps of the Supreme Court. That wasn't even really talked about too much on a lot of the mainstream news channels. His motives weren't even reported. And it's kind of crazy how all this stuff happens, and it's funny what gets picked out by especially corporate news to be shown to people and to be broadcast as like lead stories. But we have a lot that we're going to get into this week. Just wanted to throw the fact that we had these mass shooting events that took place over the past few weeks. We unfortunately also had that shooting, that police shooting in Michigan of Patrick Leoya, the immigrant from the Congo that was seeking to escape war and instead came here to the U.S. and found that he would lose his life at the hands of a police officer that decided in this traffic stop that didn't go exactly as he planned to shoot Mr. Leoya in the back of the head. The video is disturbing. I never bring myself to watch through to the end when the fatal shot is fired. Even the moments leading up to that moment are disturbing in and of themselves. But of course, all of that took place. And that's not even what I really wanted to get into this week. That is just a bunch of the things that have been taking place while I was away for this past week. I think about the fact that Elon Musk has also made this large bid to buy Twitter. I know I shared thought about that in the Tech Talk Minute, but we're actually going to expand on what that means for a free society. What it means that one man and one person can garner and amass so much power for themselves that they can essentially buy one of the largest means and channels of communication that exist in all of world history, if not the largest. I'm talking, of course, about Twitter as a social media space. To think that one person can amass the kind of capital needed to strip ownership from public hands and put it back into private hands to really change and regulate as he sees fit is an interesting proposition for the modern society, but it's not a new one. It's something that extraordinarily rich people have been attempting to do for centuries, regardless of the political system that they existed in. Rich people have always sought to control the means of one way that society operates or another. And so we're going to get into that very briefly, but I'm just, there's a whole lot to get into. There's been so much that's been taking place. Obviously, we can't talk about it all. We also have something really interesting coming up in the Tech Talk Minute pertaining to do with letting people who are in vegetative states or locked in actually communicate to the outside world again. Really fascinating stuff. But we have all that and more coming up over the course of the next hour. So you guys sit back, relax, and get ready for a really great show. Before we jump into things, though, I want to give a shout out to our show's main sponsor, Born Saint Clothing and Merchandise. The world makes us sinners, but we are born saints. For more information on Born Saint Clothing and Merchandise, or to shop Born Saint Clothing and Merchandise, you can find them on Instagram at brn.saint, or you can visit them on their online store at www.trillkennedy.com/shop. And that's where you can find the newest hoodies, t-shirts, and whatnot, the newest apparel from Born Saint Clothing and Merchandise. Just want to show them love, as always. And of course, to the radio channels that host our show, thank you guys, as always, for believing. For everyone that listens in, thank you guys for listening in. And with that all being said, let's get the show started this week. So our leadoff story this week is, of course, and it's so, what I think I find even most compelling about how I'm about to introduce this story is the fact that in any other country on earth, this would probably still be big, like really huge news right now. And yet, because we live in the US where it's literally a relatively regular phenomenon, like it's really hard to describe the mental gymnastics that even someone like myself does to introduce this in a proper way without seeming too nonchalant, because it's still gruesome. I'm of course referring to this horrific shooting in the Brooklyn subway that took place, where this gentleman that has since been identified as Frank James of Brooklyn, New York, went into the subway, donned a gas mask as the subway was getting ready to arrive at a stop, proceeded to throw some gas canisters, causing a panic inside of the train car in which he was located, and then proceeded to pull out several firearms and begin opening fire on the panicked and panicking crowd. What is the biggest blessing? And once again, that's a statement that is almost uniquely American, because anywhere else on earth, it would seem this is a horrific tragedy. But in America, because mass shootings are so common, we have to find the silver lining in them, or try and find the silver lining. And the biggest silver lining is simply the fact that no one died. 23 people were injured, and it was terrible in that sense. It was obviously a traumatic and scarring ordeal for everyone involved, regardless of whether or not a bullet actually struck them. And investigators were actually saying, like, it was simply bad marksmanship that no one died. It was a combination of luck and bad marksmanship, because otherwise more people would have died, but no one died. It was just a bunch of injuries, of course, some more severe than others. But thankfully, no one did lose their lives. But I wanted to speak to something really, I'm not going to say intriguing, but interesting, that I gleaned from that story, because everyone's talking about the mass shooting, the horror of it, of course. But one of the things that I found that was glossed over relatively quickly was the fact that this gentleman, even though they highlighted that he had this YouTube channel and was talking about all the issues that he had to face in the New York mental health system, how he didn't really receive any help, that was essentially glossed over as the rantings of a madman. And so no kind of microscope was put on the fact that he was making these statements. And I'm not here to say that anything that that man said justifies his actions, because unequivocally, nothing he has said so far to investigators or anything that's been known publicly, or even in the things that he was saying on his YouTube channel, can be used to justify shooting up a train car full of strangers. So to be clear, let's start there. But let's also not gloss over the fact that he highlighted something I think extremely important, something that gets overlooked far too often inside of our country, and something that so many of our civic leaders seem really hesitant to try and address, which is the fact that we have a mental health crisis in this country, and we've had a mental health crisis in this country for quite some time now. I think one of those things that goes unacknowledged by too many people in too many instances is the fact that the U.S. mental health system didn't really start off in the greatest place. You're talking lobotomies, people that get institutionalized accidentally, and you're talking essentially prisons for the clinically insane or for people that were suffering from mental maladies and mental illness, where they were locked together with criminally insane people. And it was just really these horrific, horrific places where you're talking about inmate abuse and torture. The fact that these people who were there for mental health disorders were referred to essentially as inmates because it was a penitentiary style setting. But since then, it's not as though mental health in America, in terms of the mental health services provided by the state, by the government, have improved to any real and large degree. Has there been more money put into research and the acknowledgement and diagnosis of a myriad of different diseases? Sure, I will give the credit to that. What I'm speaking specifically to are the budgets on a federal level, on a state-by-state level, and then even in a local and municipal level, the way that people's tax dollars are spent. Mental health is literally woefully underfunded. And when I say literally woefully, it's that there are woes that people suffer. There are impacts beyond those who need the treatment that people end up having to endure because of the lack of access to incredible or just state of the art or just really great mental health care facilities here inside of our country. We don't ever address that issue. And for God knows why. I have no reason I can tell you guys why that's not the case. What I can tell you is that there's a dangerous social combination that is taking place inside of America. And there are so many angles with which you have to look at it from that it can be a bit mind-boggling at first when you consider all those things. Because as I said, it's not as though what that man was alluding to in his YouTube videos or the sentiments that he put out there, there's no justification for his actions. But when I said that it's literally causing woes, it's that because he was suffering or he felt as though he was suffering so much, he went and took this drastic action on the subway. And so all of the people that end up victims at the end of his gun barrels are victims, not obviously entirely so, but in part due to the fact that this gentleman did not receive any kind of adequate mental health treatment. And that's one of those things that gun control advocates, if you will, always are trying to put out there is very much needed, is the fact that there needs to be greater mental health check barriers to people just being able to immediately access guns. And one thing that I have had to learn over the years, especially as it comes to gun rights, gun ownership, and people's ability to purchase and access firearms in our country, is that yes, of course, you can try and put all the mental health checks that you need in place, but the reality and the truth of the matter is that up and until we address the root systemic issues at how we look at and treat mental health in our country, that's not going to make too much of a difference. And that's not even mentioning the fact that we would then also have to classify anger as a mental health issue. Because the truth of the matter is, there are some guys who, you know, you come home, you see your wife cheating on you or whatever the case may be. There are some people who just lose it mentally. Something happens that whatever facade they were maintaining for society is immediately broken. Some people get angry. For some people, their anger festers over time. But there are so many psychological nuances that one has to know that even putting those mental health check barriers would only represent putting a Band-Aid on a festering wound. And so I just wanted to take a look at the cocktail of issues that our society is facing, because I believe it's unique to history. It's new and unique to history. And when I say that, it's not to say that there aren't things happening that have never happened before in terms of maybe there was some other mode and mean back in history that we can analogously compare and reflect and say, well, this is similar to that. But it is to say that the confluence of factors and the things that are going on societally here inside of America right now, it's never been seen in these proportions with these specific things going on in any society in the history of the world before. So let me break it down and reference a few things just so we're all kind of clear on what exactly is happening inside of our nation and why it leads to moments like what took place on the Brooklyn subway. So let's start out with this. Our country is the biggest arms dealer on the planet, right? We sell weapons to the world. We help fund and finance conflicts, whether state-sponsored or corporately sponsored conflicts in various corners of the globe, mostly with concentrations on Africa and the Middle East. Africa because it's so resource rich and relatively unstable in terms of government and military power that's present and organized throughout the varying African states, right? And the Middle East, of course, because of the oil, gas, all that stuff that's there that we use to fuel our cars and our homes and general society. So let's get that out of the way. We are the biggest arms manufacturer in the world, and the strategic reasons that we're building and developing these arms is because it's an extraordinarily profitable industry. It's the industry of physical violence, lending authority and power to whether it's states, corporations, or warlords and criminals who can afford the weapons. But as a nation, we supply arms to the world, not only the nations of the world, but we also have private military contractors and things like that, where we source out arms to these private companies that work security for large corporations in corners of the world, as I said, like Africa and the Middle East. So let's start out there. There's a part of me that's always felt as though there's almost like this karmic retribution for what's taking place here inside the US, right? Because if you take a look at our society and where we are right now, you would seem to think that because so much of the world's blood is shed by the weapons that are produced here in American factories, that it's almost like this karmic debt that we're repaying as a society for all the wealth that those arms sales bring in. We still outspend our military competition by almost orders of magnitude. No one spends as much money on military defense and arms as the United States of America. So let's start there. You have a country that fosters the most violence, home and abroad, in the history of humanity. We'll start there. So we're the weapons manufacturer and dealer of the world. Next, we have a mental health crisis inside of this country that has been unaddressed for so long that it's astounding to me that with all the people that are on one prescription drug or another for things like depression, antisocial personality disorder, and other things like that, that this wouldn't be a more mainstream issue. I don't know how it's not more mainstream when literally you watching this video right now, or anyone else that's watching this video that's listening to this broadcast live, you know someone that is suffering from mental illness right now, whether it's a family member or a friend or someone at work, you know somebody that's suffering from some kind of mental illness, one or another, right this second. And so inside of this country where you have dozens of millions of Americans that are suffering from different mental illnesses, right, that some go undiagnosed and unchecked, others can't afford whatever medication is out there. The medication itself turns people into zombies and has horrendous side effects. There are all these things that are going on, but what it leads to is a country where you have a lot of people who are walking around suffering from a mental illness and are either unaware of it or know that they can't do anything about it, and so they suffer in silence. There's still, of course, the stigma that comes along with mental illness. People look at you like you're crazy. You feel like you can't talk to anyone about it. And most importantly, instead of the state providing facilities, providing budgets where they could pay and hire counselors to really get the mind of the nation back into a really great place, our priorities are still with weapons manufacturing and the sale of arms and military technology to our police forces here and to other nations and their militaries abroad, or to private interests. When you talk about, once again, those like security contractors and things like that, they also have small deals that they do with our government. That having been said, why it's been such a priority and why, even though there are politicians who have family members that suffer from mental illness and things like that, why nothing has been done remains a mystery to this day. So we have a mental health crisis in a country that manufactures and produces the most arms in the history of the world. And then we also live in a society where pills and drugs reign the day. We are also the most drugged up society on the planet. It's one of those things that I talked about when it comes to mental health, is the fact that even if people are misdiagnosed or undiagnosed and untreated, even those who receive treatment, the drugs that they're on strip them of their personality, have really, really disgusting side effects, if you want to be honest and really upfront about it. And most importantly, when you put that many people on drugs, I was actually just speaking with a good friend of mine that works in education. This is up in the state of Delaware. And he said, when you take a look at the classroom rosters, because they have access to this when you work in the educational system, you can see exactly how many kids are on prescriptions for, like, if not Adderall, and I don't want to say Adderall because it's not exactly Adderall, but it's like different ADD and ADHD medications that they try and give to kids. If you see how many kids right now they're already getting on pill regimens, it is bonkers. And so from the kids on up, we have generations of Americans that cannot and do not function in everyday life without some sort of prescription pill or medication that they're taking. So we have a country that produces a bunch of weaponry, that has a mental health crisis that has gone unrecognized and unaddressed for decades now, for decades and decades and decades. And we also live in the most drugged up society on the planet. We live in a society where people's reality is bent and warped by the prescription drugs that they are taking. And when you have those factors coming together, as I said, it's a unique point in history, because I haven't even touched on the fact that social media, as it exists, is a boon for misinformation. We also live in a society where people exist in dichotomous realities. There isn't an agreed upon reality in American society anymore. And it hasn't been like that really since the early 2000s, as Fox News kind of came more into the mainstream fray and garnered more and more of an audience to feed their poison pills to. Like, we also happen to live in a country where, in addition to all those things that I just mentioned before, we also don't share a reality. Half the people live in one world and the other half live in another world, politically speaking. And those things are used to keep people miles apart. And so when you have all these things inside of one society, and mind you, I am once again just scratching the surface. We're not even talking about the legalized corruption of the bribery system that we know as lobbying here in the United States of America. We're not talking about dark money and super PACs that enter into the political fray to make sure that our voice as a people, like, we don't really have a choice in who we elect. We elect the people that maybe make it onto the ticket, but to get onto the ticket, to be relevant in the political sphere in this country, the amount of dark money that goes into picking the candidates and giving us the illusion of choice. There's all these things that we never really ever talk about, but that play a role into the madness of everyday life. And so when you look at someone like a Frank James, someone who is already psychologically disturbed, someone who, I'm not going to say to his credit, but was seeking out some mental treatment. And once again, he shoulders full responsibility for the actions that he took in terms of going and deciding to try and take these people's lives on that subway train that morning. But at the same time, at what point are we as a society going to take a look in the mirror and say that this is not sustainable? We can't continue to operate like this. And I always hear, like, especially on conservative talk radio, historically you hear about things like social engineering and they're just trying to socially engineer your kids and do this. And it's like, bro, that's what they're doing as well. And we're going to get into this as well when it comes to the fact that Florida just banned over 50 math textbooks for referring to things like race or implicit bias or social emotional learning. The fact that kids should be taught to empathize with their classmates. Like, it's bonkers and off the rails already in this country. And it leads to, and that's my greatest point, is that when we have those kind of deficiencies all going on at the same time, it leads to this unique and deadly atmosphere where we live in a place where it's like the Hunger Games almost, like, may the odds ever be in your favor that one day you don't wake up and decide, I want to go to the grocery store or the mall or the movies or some other public place, and end up in a place where someone goes to commit a mass shooting. When you have all these factors, it creates the kind of uniquely destructive environment that we all live in. We all have to compartmentalize for. So we can't constantly be thinking about the fact that a mass shooting can happen, but it's always there in the back of our minds, almost like a waiting reflex. If we hear a loud pop while we're out at the grocery store or something like that, we're immediately looking around like, was it a balloon? Was it something dropping? Or was it a gunman walking in here, and am I in a horrible event? As a country collectively, That's what we're being subjected to. And I think about the fact that even with all that being the case, everything that I just enumerated and listed out for you, we have politicians that are still far more dedicated to lining their own pockets and to telling us that there is no right time to ever talk about whether it's gun control or mental health. There's never a right time to speak about those issues or address them. And for my money, once Sandy Hook happened and a bunch of small young white children got killed, and no one batted an eye and nothing really changed, is when I kind of felt like all hope was lost. We're beyond off the rails. And here we are essentially 10 years later, and it's sadly come to fruition in terms of the gun debate. There's been no progress or movement. And outside of the gun debate, there has also sadly been very little progress when it comes to mental health and how we address it as a country. Now, what can we do? Because it's not just about talking about the problems that exist, some possible solutions. Well, for one, we need to start diverting some funding on a federal level when it comes to our fiscal budget. Get proactive. Go on Google, look up who the congressional representative for your district is. And when I say do that, it's very simple. First thing you do, you go on Google, you type your address in, followed by congressional district in whatever state that you live in. That's the first steps. You find out what congressional district you live in. From there, you can learn which representative represents your congressional district in the U.S. House of Representatives, as well as what senators represent your state. You can begin to call them and let them know that we are in desperate need as a country of increased funding for mental health services. That means that when they sit down next time to do the budget, and that'll be for fiscal year 2023, they need to look at and include increased funding for the mental health sector, for mental health services, and not just to increase the amount of drugs that they put out there, but an increase in the amount of money that they allocate towards salaries for people that are actually working in the public sector to provide those mental health services so that we can have therapists that are not only paid their worth, but feel as though it's worth their time to do their jobs well so that the system itself won't be as bureaucratized as it will, where you'll have people that are not only paid their worth, but feel incentivized and can actually make a living going out and helping other people. Even that small shift could help represent a change in the conversation that brings about much needed larger scale change here in our country. And outside of calling your congresspeople and letting them know en masse that we need this, we can also donate to groups. For example, here in Florida, there's the Florida Mental Health Advocacy Coalition. They're a nonprofit, nonpartisan group of organizations that work to promote and provide mental health services here in the state of Florida. On a national level, there's NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, that people can literally reach out to, donate to. And these are organizations that are working to try and fill in the gaps left behind by the federal, state, and local governments. But I say all that to say that there is a way that we can try and make a difference. It's just that there's also a lot of roadblocks and obstacles that have been put up. But for my money, I do believe that the mental health conversation is one that we need to be focused more on, because it is one of obviously several maladies currently ravaging our society. But if we don't get a greater grasp on it, if we don't provide more funding towards that sector, then all we're going to do is create a society more and more filled with people who are not only undiagnosed or misdiagnosed, but who don't know why they're feeling the way that they're feeling, who may be walking around and just going through certain experiences psychologically. And because of the stigma and the lack of affordable services or services that are adequate provided by the government, can't get the treatment that they really, really and truly need. That's at least my hope moving forward for the future. Let me know your thoughts down in the comments section if you're watching this on YouTube. If you're listening to this on the live broadcast, check us out on the Tuesday rebroadcast and let us know in the comments section, whether it's on the YouTube channel or on our Facebook or Instagram page. Just let me know what you guys think, because I personally think this is not an unsolvable issue, but it's a lack of effort on the part of those who have power and really some complacency on our part as voters and citizens, not holding those in power more accountable by voting them out of office when the time for election day comes up. Either way, we have a lot more to get to. Just wanted to put a little spotlight on the fact that the mental health crisis in this country is still very much ongoing, still very much highly unaddressed, and there's still a ton of ways that we can do our part to try and improve things, although ultimately the onus is still going to fall on those with the power to make the legislative changes necessary and to allocate the budgetary money necessarily to improve the conditions of our mental health system here in the United States. We have more coming up, though, here on No Alter Egos. So our next story today focuses on an age-old adage that we've heard, whether it's from parents, from older, wiser folks, or even in Spider-Man comics and various different little institutions. We always hear this saying, with great power comes great responsibility. And I want to speak on the fact that even though we're taught that from kids all the way through adults, we're taught this phrase, with great power comes great responsibility, essentially saying that when you are given much in life, it is almost, there's an onus placed on you to give much back in return. It's a part of the balance of the system of our universe, if you will, right? And we're taught this over and over and over again. And one of those things that I've had to grow up and realize is just simply not true is that statement. We say it to each other over and over and over again, but it doesn't bear true in real life. In real life, people can become powerful. People, in fact, do become powerful all the time, whether it's running companies or running governments. They become extraordinarily powerful and they shirk their responsibilities. There is actually no sense of responsibility. And in fact, when we talk about the oligarchs that populate our world, and by oligarchs, I do mean the extraordinarily wealthy people who get to pretend that they don't have a say in how our societies are run, but who consistently have no money to give to feeding the poor, ending homelessness here in the US, but do have money to do things like build back the Notre Dame Cathedral after a fire takes it out. It's all these things when we think about the richest people on the planet who we normally offer this sense of privacy to because, well, they're still people after all, but we consistently always remove them somehow from the equation. We always lay the blame squarely at the feet of politicians who I've just realized are the middlemen for the pain between like upper class and lower class folks. Politicians take all the blame, but they're just the means as well as a participant in this game. The reality is the politicians are beholden to their mega donors. That's usually corporations whose board members and largest shareholders also donate to large super PACs anonymously, super PACs that get to determine whether or not a candidate will have the funding necessary to even run a feasible and viable campaign here in the U.S. And so all of this brings me back into the loop on the central point of this topic, which outside of the fact that it's no, there is no greater responsibility that comes with the great amassing of power and wealth here, at least in our reality in this world. It's just not true. The reality is we're constantly shown little examples of how the power that has already been accrued by the wealthiest people in the world, how there really is nothing or at least very few things in place to prevent them from amassing even more of it and wielding an inordinate amount of power over each and every one of our lives. I'm, of course, referring to Elon Musk in this moment and his bid to purchase and take over Twitter. So there's an entire timeline to the series of events. I'm going to go through that timeline really quickly, and then I'm going to break down what that could potentially mean and look like for society and what, if anything, can be done about it moving forward, right? Because the truth of the matter is there are these two things that we do have to balance, which is that we want to give people the freedom to be prosperous. But at what point do we say that you can't take your prosperity and then use it to wield an ungodly amount of power over the lives of others, which historically has always been the case? We still haven't fully found the answer to that question. I just want to make clear. But to get you guys caught up on things, let's run through a quick timeline of what even led to this moment and this decision. So before everything all started, federal regulators approached a U.S. federal judge and said that Elon Musk's tweets have to be regulated. This, of course, comes after a series of events over the course of the last several years that saw Elon and his tweets do things as crazy as drive up the value of Dogecoin to just insane levels, making some people very rich, but leaving everyone else essentially holding the bag once the larger holders of Dogecoin essentially pulled their profits from underneath everyone. Now, Dogecoin still is holding some value, but I say all that to say that it really took off because of a tweet from Elon Musk. And that's just one example of several over the past few years where he has used the power of his Twitter and its 80 million followers to influence economic events in global and U.S. markets. It's an insane thing to think about that one person could and should wield all that power, but it's been demonstrated several times. And so in lieu of those facts, federal regulators had been seeking initially to try and tamper down his tweets, or at least say that, hey, like, because people respond in certain ways to his tweets, maybe he can't say go buy this stock or do that, because then people can buy it and it can inflate artificially the value of certain stocks, drive the value up. And it's a form of social manipulation. Now, we're not going to even get into the stock market and its game and how the stock market is essentially a large Ponzi scheme. You didn't hear that here, though. We could get into the details of it, but it's on its face. You're putting money, betting on these companies that their inner workings are going to be successful. And you as an individual investor don't really have the tools and the means to access the inner financial workings and the day to days of these companies to know how strong they're going to be. So we in turn rely on corporate news and different reports and things like that to let us know which companies are strong, which are not. But at the end of the day, it's all a large game of mass psychology and betting odds. We're all betting that certain companies that look certain ways are going to be prosperous over the long haul, that the economy is going to continuously grow over the long haul. And so people get into the stock market in the hopes that the money that they put in will essentially metastasize over time, that their holdings will grow. But we know time and time again that is not the case for individual investors. It's the large institutions and large shareholders, people that have the capital to shield themselves from the eventual downturns in the market, that really come out the winners time and time again. And so, yeah, it's a large Ponzi scheme. A bunch of people put their money in hoping that they're going to get rich off their stocks. What usually happens is the stock goes up, they see a little profit, and then the people that put in millions of dollars that are seeing millions of dollars in realized gains pull their gains out. The stock value drops, the people are left holding the bag. Back to our regularly scheduled programming, though. So these regulators try and get Elon to just watch his tweets. Watch what you're tweeting about. Because you're such an extraordinarily powerful Twitter account, you're the richest man on the planet. When you say things, it can drive economic action, which why our economies around the globe is set up in such a way that one man can wield that kind of power and influence. It may be showing us a weakness and a crack that can be addressed, but that's neither here nor there. So that happens, right? And in the midst of all this, Elon tweets out that he's going to look into making his own social media platform. If they're going to regulate my tweets, I'm going to do my own thing. Richest man on earth, worth over $250 billion. He has the money where he could literally go start his own extraordinarily successful company if he wanted to, just because he'd be literally too big to fail. He has all the money necessary to build a very large company from the ground up in a relatively short period of time. So once he starts making that buzz, you know, people don't really take that part too seriously, though, because even though he could technically do it, why would he want to spend all the time trying to build a competitor? We've seen the efforts that have taken place over the past few years, even from like President Trump and his cronies, how they tried to start up Truth Social and the kind of debacle that has been. Anyways, people don't take that so seriously, but then immediately after that, it's announced that the man had bought 9.2% of Twitter for just under $3 billion. He bought a tenth of the company, right? Or just under a tenth of the company. And so everyone starts looking around like, yo, wait. And with such a large shareholder percentage or shareholder stake that he had garnered and acquired for himself, he was offered a seat on Twitter's board. The CEO even came out and said, you know, we've been talking with him for a few weeks, which means they knew that he was getting ready to buy these shares several weeks beforehand. But in those talks, they said that we feel like he'd be an excellent board member addition. And so it's like, yo, this man really went from tweeting about how he's going to start his own social media channel to owning one of the largest social media channels, becoming the majority in terms of individual shareholder. He became the largest one of one of the largest platforms that are currently in existence. So after the whole is he not going to be on the board thing was announced, he's actually not going to be joining the board. People kind of calmed down for a little bit. And then another bombshell dropped as he announced he'd be willing to buy Twitter for $43 billion at $54.20 a share, representing, I believe, an 18% increase in the share price value right now for all shareholders, which means that anyone that holds it would see a finalized increase in payout of 18% return on whatever they're holding. So whatever they're holding now plus 18%. It was a really nice boost that he gave to the stock's value in terms of his valuation of the company when he made this offer. Once again, People were like, is he serious? Is he going to do this? The board of Twitter still had to respond, though. They put out this poison pill defense. They say, okay, if you're going to do that, then we're going to make it so that the shareholders can buy back even more shares and dilute the shareholder pool by purchasing and repurchasing shares at much lower prices, thereby diluting the stock price and driving up the cost to purchase the company. That is, if Elon was actually looking to do this. They weren't sure, but they pulled the move. It's called a poison pill. Essentially, it dilutes, as I said, the share value by making a bunch of shares available at super low costs to people who are already invested in the public company. And it's done so that should a hostile takeover be attempted, they can drive the price of the company up to a point where maybe the person who made the bid originally to try and take the company over can no longer afford to do it. They can't secure the financing. Well, what does Elon do? He goes out and he says he secured $46 billion in funding and financing for his attempt to purchase Twitter. So where does that leave us? And why did I point back or start this segment off with my soliloquy on how we have this hypocritical statement about with great power, there comes great responsibility. But the reality and truth is that there is no real responsibility that is required of billionaires in our society. The most powerful humans on the planet, the people with the most physical capital. And in many ways, the most social capital, because when you're a billionaire, you're everybody's friend. Everyone wants to be around you. The people in position to change our world the most do the least in terms of ways that they're actually offering to try and improve the planet instead of paying off politicians that are actively making the world better. And so there's all these things that could be done that just aren't. In fact, it's one of those things that really informs me about the state of the most powerful people in the world. When you think about the fact that, man, like, you have all this money and all these resources, why don't you work to get a lot of these politicians up out of office? Why don't you work to get people elected that actually care about people? Why don't you give to political causes that are actually going to improve people's lives immeasurably? Why are you interested in keeping and putting politicians that foment and foster cultural wars, that keep people distracted and divided, and that end up divvying out money to defense and corporate interests? Well, because corporate interests are their interests. And so we're at this point where this oligarch, this extraordinarily and inordinately powerful man, the richest man on the planet, has decided and has been able to purchase a means of communication that a ton of people around the world use. And he's done it on a whim. And there's nothing that we can really do outside of the poison pill defense and maybe some antitrust regulations to stop him. Because the truth is, and this is, as I said earlier, we live in a world run by, and it has always been run by the rich, but this is a new evolution. Corporations, multinational and global corporations, the power that they hold over people's lives is really astounding. I don't even think we've begun to grasp really how much of a stranglehold they have on our everyday life, from how we sleep, where we live, to what we eat and drink, the means, modes, and methods by which we communicate and maintain and establish relationships with each other. Like, all of these things that we do, there's a large corporation usually behind it. There are all these companies that essentially have ownership over all the different and varying aspects of everyday life that we live. And we have a society whereby this one man, the richest man in the world, can on a whim say that because he doesn't like that his tweets may be regulated. Personally, I think he doesn't like that there's that kid that tracks his private jet. He's going to look to get that account shut down ASAP. But really, what does it mean when we're giving one man the power to reshape how we as a society communicate? Because we already did that with social media apps, right? So Twitter was owned by someone privately before it went public. It was Jack Dorsey, one of the co-founders of Twitter. Just like how Facebook, one of its co-founders, Mark Zuckerberg, still essentially runs the show. And one of the reasons why we've kind of been fine with that being the case is because, well, it's your brainchild. You started the venture up, and even if it has grown into this behemoth, we have to technically entrust that the vision that you have for it is going to carry it through to a good place. Now, obviously, with Facebook, we've seen it become a hotbed for misinformation, disinformation, lies, and chaos and destabilization. Twitter has some of those effects, but really, Twitter has been a place where reality, and I'm not going to say it's embraced more because you have armies of Twitter bots that can put out misinformation at a moment's notice, but Twitter has been slightly, And I say this very gingerly, slightly more proactive than Facebook in trying to slow down the spread of misinformation. And yet and still, we've reached this crossroads where an inordinately powerful man, an oligarch, is even in a position right now to outright purchase a public company and take it back under private control and change the rules as he sees fit. We've said in our society that's okay. And that's why I started off the segment with the fact that with great power comes great responsibility. Like, that's just not true. That's a platitude that we tell ourselves. But in the real world, in real life, extraordinarily powerful people don't have to answer for much at all. They can do what they want with their money. And this is the result that we get, where with the money that he's proposing to raise and has raised, according to him, $46.5 billion to buy Twitter, he can end homelessness. And yet it's being used to fulfill one man's wishes to own a means of communication. So what can we do to address it? Obviously, the poison pill measure has already been tried. Antitrust laws in the modern day have shown themselves to be surprisingly very weak and feckless in the face of these kind of challenges, where it's like, well, how much power can one man really amass for himself? And the truth of the matter is, in the games by which the rule is being played right now, there's unfortunately not too much that currently exists on the books that would be able to stop or prevent Elon Musk from purchasing Twitter. There are some who don't even believe that it would necessarily be a bad thing. Of course, they exist on a certain side of the political spectrum. But I say all that to say, we've set ourselves up for a system where one man, if he's able to gain and amass this kind of money, really can take that kind of control. And I don't know what that says about us as a species. I do know what it says about Elon, though, in that here is a man who is so hyper fixated and focused on his own goals in terms of doing what he wants to make himself more money, that he can propose to spend an amount of money that would once again solve homelessness in this country. And we're all just watching it play out and unfold in real time. In fact, it could be quite possible that he gets his way. On Sunday, the 24th of this past week, he got together with members of the board of Twitter to discuss what a potential buyout would look like, what him taking the company back into private hands would look like. And while one can only hope that it doesn't take place, reality dictates that that's not always the result that we get. And there are times when people who are extraordinarily powerful in this world just get their way. And that's where we are. That's the deal that we've signed up for and accepted. In order to make everyone prosperous, there are those who will be able to amass such money and wealth and power that they can effectively control how the rest of us live our lives. We're going to keep things moving, though, to what I've been reading this past week, as well as our Tech Talk Minute and the final thought. Stick around here on No Alter Egos. So what I've been reading lately has been extraordinarily fascinating. I talked about it a few weeks ago. I managed to finish the book up now. It has been Republican Gemara by Max Blumenthal. I, of course, spoke about how it made references to the family, that religious organization that operates out of Washington, D.C., and really seeks to indoctrinate as many conservative Christian leaders into its ranks and membership as possible and put them in positions of power, both in D.C. and around the country. And having gone through the book, it's almost an overwhelming and exasperating read on the current state of conservative politics here in America. And what's worse is that the book is extraordinarily prescient. It was written back in 2009 after the election of President Obama, and it was showing how up until that point, there was essentially a takeover of conservatism in America by theocrats, Christian theocrats, who are seeking to essentially establish a Christian God-based government here in the United States. Folks like James Dobson, operating in the shadows and using puppets like a Newt Gingrich or a Mitt Romney or a Tom DeLay here and there to do their bidding and to do the will of God, if you will, in Congress and in other places of power. And the stunning level of hypocrisy achieved by these people. The fact that you have even members of the LGBT community who essentially sell out their community in the pursuit of personal power while operating on the behalf of conservative values. It even talks about the new kind of conservatism. And that's why I said it was very prescient. Even though it was written back in 2009, so much of what it spoke about has manifested in the election of former President Trump and the way that we see so many people today who really will vote for a politician based on whether or not that politician is pro-life or pro-choice. There's all these little things that aren't just these random happenings, but there has been a conscious, funded effort over decades now to get people into certain powerful leadership positions that are of a particular mindset. And it's being done with the goal and intention, once again, to establish a Christian theocracy here inside of America. It's been a fascinating read. It was a fascinating read. And I would highly encourage anyone who is seeking to gain a grip on why certain aspects of political conservatism are in the place that they are at today. It's a wonderful foundational read, going and showing some of the ways that this dark money, but from, you know, so-called Christians, have really infiltrated their way into U.S. politics to create policies that are not only harmful to the reproductive rights of women, but that are harmful socially to people who are not white and Christian. I don't know how else to really put that. The level of hypocrisy shown, once again, as I said, from people who use the conservative movement, even though they're gay, to gain positions of power for themselves, all the while deriding gay people and gay culture. For those who would use the death of a Terri Schiavo, I don't know if you remember her, but she was the woman who was in a persistent vegetative state here in Florida, who ended up having the feeding tube removed from her after a large and lengthy court battle to do so. She was used as a pawn on the conservative right as some kind of like right to life argument. It was really, really, really dark territories that were ventured into. And as I said, stunning levels of hypocrisy, and that people are willing to literally say one thing while doing and living the other, because to them it doesn't apply because they're rich and the rules don't really apply to them. But I would highly encourage anyone who is interested in politics and social life generally, and just how organizations impact the politics of our society, to read Republican Gemara by Max Blumenthal. Interesting and insightful read into the way that many of these Christian foundations have infiltrated the conservative right to push it even further to the right in the goals of establishing a theocracy here in our country. Coming up next, we have our Tech Talk Minute, followed by our final thought. So for our Tech Talk Minute, I want to speak really quickly on BCI. That's brain-computer interfaces, and what they're doing for a ton of people around the country, even though we are still very much in the early days of this technology. Now, one of the mainstream companies a lot of people hear about is Neuralink. That's Elon Musk's company. But they're actually not only relatively new, they've been relatively pathetic at their attempts at BCI, at brain-computer interfacing. There are older and more established companies like BlackRock, who, founded back in 2008, have made a ton of advances over the years in brain-computer interface technology, allowing people to have their sense of touch restored, sense of sight restored, sense of hearing restored, as well as the ability to speak when they are locked in and communicate effectively. It's still in the relatively early days, even though there are companies that have been working for quite some time to make this technology and improve upon it. I'm saying all this to say that we are at an extraordinarily exciting time when it comes to brain-computer interfacing, or BCI. I mean, we're talking about a technology that has allowed people who are paralyzed to move again. And even though Neuralink, which has been, once again, the company that we hear about so often, isn't doing the greatest job, this is a field of science that has a ton of dedicated professionals that are working to create a future where we have brain chip implants that can help us save and replay memories, a la Black Mirror, and once again, that can help people that are in a coma or locked in communicate again with the outside world. And I just wanted to shine a spotlight on that entire industry, because I'm a big believer in moving forward towards the future, in technologies and technological advances that can help move us as a species towards the future. And I think that BCI is one of those main technologies that is really going to take the human animal to another level. We have our final thought coming up before we close out here on No Alter Egos. So I wanted to keep the final thought today short and sweet. And that thought is this: don't let worry steal any more of your time. One of the biggest thieves of time, in fact, it is the biggest thief of time in all of existence outside of the prison system, is worrying. we worry and worry and worry about things that haven't happened yet, things that we have to get done, things that we think we may not be able to do. There's all of these things that we give unnecessary thought time and that we allow to occupy our minds and our thoughts. We allow it to invade our very being. And it's one of the things that I've come to realize as I've lived life is that the more we worry, the less time we actually have to focus on those things that we're worrying about. We're so busy focused on the problems that we're not spending active time thinking of the solutions or spending the time taking the action to address those things so that we don't end up in the situations that we're actually worrying about. We spend so much time worrying that we forget that worrying is simply supposed to be a quick reminder and nothing else. We get absorbed in our worries. And it steals so much of our time that it's really quite hard and difficult to calculate. But I want to encourage you as you go through this week to worry less. Of course, remind yourself of the things that you do have to do, sure. But don't spend so much time fomenting on them and thinking about them that you don't actually take the action to get them done. Don't spend so much time worrying that you forget that you have all this time that you can spend addressing instead of thinking about your issues and problems and whatever it is that you have to get done. As always, just want to thank everyone for being here during this hour. If you've liked what you've heard and you're watching this on YouTube, even if you're listening in to the live broadcast, you can actually go onto our YouTube channel and just drop a like, drop a comment. Let me know what you thought about this week's episode. It's the No Alter Egos channel on YouTube. You can find me once again at Trill Kennedy on Instagram or at Trill_Kennedy on TikTok. And that's Trill with no I. You can find the show at No Alter Egos on both Instagram and Facebook. And that's simply once again at No Alter Egos on both Instagram and Facebook. Just want to thank you guys for being here through this week. Ready to kick the show off again. Going to be here with you guys through the rest of this year, God willing, with a few breaks here and there. But generally, just want to make sure I can help keep you guys as up to date and informed on some of the biggest happenings that are going on in the world right now. Want to thank you guys, as always, for just making this job a pleasure. Remember to go out there. Don't worry this week nearly as much as you're used to worrying. Take it easy and take control of your life again. Take care of yourselves. And as always, God bless.
Looking in the mirror, I know I'm imperfect, just like everybody else I know. Most times I wish the world looked beneath the surface, but I guess that's how life goes. Had to learn to love myself this time around. Pop a bottle in and take a sip just because. Book a flight and then take a trip just because. Love myself just because.